Marianne Wolfe knows as much as anybody on the planet about what the human brain is actually doing when it reads. She runs the Center for Reading and Language Research at Tufts University and enjoyed significant popular success for her last book, Proust and the Squid, The Story and Science of the Reading Brain. But as Anne Strainchamps found out, Wolfe is equally passionate about the dyslexic brain.
I like to say that the dyslexia brain is proof and daily evidence that the brain was never wired to read. Now, there all these children in the world, all these individuals are walking around with brains that are so often, I can't say that for every single person, but so often these are brains that are wired to see spatial patterns, to see the big picture, to go outside the box, to think holistically. Often they're artists, often they're architects. And yeah, that same advantage or set of advantages which made them before literacy our generals, our builders, a lot of our great figures, that made a disadvantage at the same time for some of the wiring that goes into left hemisphere language processes. Now, the real, if you want to know my real task in life, it's to reconceptualize or to help reconceptualize dyslexia from being thought of as a deficit or something wrong with the brain to realizing this is an extraordinary and beautiful brain that we have failed as an educational system to know how to teach easily when it comes to reading. But that is a failure not of the child, but of us to understand. And one of the joys for me in brain imaging is that we're able to look and see how many of our individuals with dyslexia have such interesting right hemispheric processes, and when you look at how they read, are using the right hemisphere inefficiently for a left hemisphere-like task.
You know, what's really interesting is the way you describe it. It sounds as though people who are dyslexic, who are often regarded by teachers as handicapped, actually may be among the most gifted of us. I mean, rather than having any kind of deficit, they may be really gifted.
Well, I want to say two things. The first is that some of the greatest inventors and artists that we know have a history of dyslexia. We look at Picasso, we look at Thomas Edison, we look at Gaudi, we look at Rodin, we look at modern entrepreneurs who are looking outside the box at a global level all the time in the world of finance. Charles Schwab, Paul Orfalea. You look at Silicon Valley. You see in a study by Julie Logan in London, they found that 35% of entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs, have had a history of dyslexia. Now, what in the world? That's a percentage that is not coincidental. And then you look in your classrooms, or you ask for the histories of some of these wonderful individuals, and they will tell you they thought they were stupid. They had teachers who did not know. They weren't trained. They didn't realize any of this. And they felt the children were simply not working to potential or were lazy. Nothing could have been less true, but the child doesn't know that they aren't working to potential. The child thinks they're working and failing. And so one of my real tasks is to, and I say it's a task, but it's also a joy, opportunity, is to help teachers and parents realize every one of us has a potential, every single one of us. But a dyslexic child's potential is often absolutely invisible because they have thought they were stupid, and it is a complex embroidery of thinking they are different than they're stupid and they can't learn. Now, the most resilient are great successes, but many people aren't.
Could neuroscience point the way to discovering new pathways to help dyslexic children learn to read more easily?
This is the question that has motivated the last 15 years of my life, and I believe we're really closing in on it. Our goal is to develop principles that all programs should use to help teach our children who have difficulties. So yes, the answer is an optimistic yes.
Mary- Marianne Wolfe is the director of the Center for Reading and Language Research at Tufts University. She spoke with Anne Strangchamps.